Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 789. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Half a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Really enjoying the full Stunt Granny studio experience now. A little more comfortable to podcast, so I am not arguing in the least bit. But in the new lair, I have watched a number of wrestling events. One of them was this past Friday, AEW Rampage. Chris, hey, for a change, we actually have watched it and can review it for this show.
Yes. Don't expect this to become a habit.
Well, I do remember you correctly noting that it was 2 1-hour programs. And that was indeed the case on my television, and it was kind of funny that they actually had to blip to black. I don't feel like I've seen that from a wrestling promotion rolling over an hour in a really long time. So yeah, that was kind of interesting to see their little blip go off. But anyway, way before the blip, I heard about his arrival before actually seeing AEW Rampage. The great Muta shows up to bail out his good buddy Sting. Your thoughts on this? I suppose somewhat momentous event.
Yeah, it was a good moment to have. Boy, do you have to have a long memory to remember the Great Muta and Sting.
you are really counting on fans of our age to be pulling this one out. And you might even be a little bit young on the demographic for remembering this one.
No, I was watching wrestling in 1989, but not a regular viewer of World Championship Wrestling. So I did not see much in the way of Sting and the Great Muta live as it happened.
Yeah, I do remember watching some of it. I believe that was pretty early on when we got cable there, and or we watched it somewhere, because I do remember having a bunch of their WCW and WWF at the time. We recorded all of the pay-per-views and gave them to our friends' grandparents, because they did not get the pay-per-view, so we always spread that out. And I remember having pay-per-views from this that time period there. I'm not sure if I still have those VHSs or not. I think I do. I'm not completely sure where, though. Anywho, yeah, it was quite a callback. It was quite a moment. But it's still a little rough on me that these 60 and 70 year olds are getting the best of people 30 years their junior. It's something.
Yeah, it's definitely something, and it's definitely a product of modern times and nostalgia. Because wrestling promotions used to get raked over the coals for featuring anyone over the age of 40 at some points in the 90s, definitely. It is pretty hilarious. But no, it was a nice little moment to have during the match. I know Sting is going over to Japan for the final match of the Great Muta. jumping to January, I believe that will be taking place.
Oh, okay.
So there's definitely been something in the works there for a while. The match itself, oh boy, was this thing a train wreck. Or a demolition derby. What do you want to take your pick? A number of people went through a number of things that that could have gone very seriously wrong.
And thankfully, at least as far as I know, nothing did go seriously wrong.
Yeah, no, I still don't know what happened to Julia Hart. How that table even broke like that. When she spilled out. That was wild.
Yeah, that was one where it almost exploded.
Only one part of it exploded. and then she went tumbling onto the floor on the back of her head. Sting, they tried to do a deal, one of the deals where Sting goes through two tables at the same time, but only went through one and then cracked his head on the other table. Obviously, Darby Allin was a crazy man and took a large fall off the stage alongside Brody King.
Oh, yeah.
That one's probably the safest bump of the match, actually.
Yeah, this was one of Darby Allin's tamer, no rules matches in general.
But he came out of it with what did appear to be a large cut on the top of his head, so somehow he still got hurt in this fiasco. But now it's again. And entertaining opener for Rampage. I'm not sure exactly the order they taped everything in, but if they did tape that match right after Dynamite was over, that's probably the right move to keep people in the spirit of the evening as the later it got.
Oh. Yeah, if you thought the regular Rampage was a little too late at night, when you have Rampage, the second hour of Rampage running from 11 to midnight, I will fully admit that I was asleep before Ricky Starks and Hobbs came on the TV.
Well, I guess I can't talk about that match either because my DVR cut off.
Oh, yeah, I did not have any problems in that department. I did have to watch it the following day. It was a long one. Friday night. Friday always seems like a long day. So did not make that through the first go round. And some of the action that opener was great. A lot of the other stuff was just okay.
Yeah. No. I can't say I was paying a great amount of attention to some of the lesser matches. I mean, it was for the live crowd last Wednesday that had already been set through the entirety of Dynamite, and you're going past midnight on the East Coast when apparently Arthur Ashe Stadium is just a disaster to get to. In regards to public transportation, so a lot of people did leave early. So a lot of people did leave early before or during the lights out match, and understandably.
Oh, yeah. They've done a good job with that storyline, but it's also been one of those ones that because. Starks he got stomped so hard in that first match. It was still a little hard to buy this for some reason or another. Like, the reheating of this feud did not go great for me. Like, it seemed like that was such an emphatic win by Hobbs that they were just moving on. And, you know, they'd start doing separate feuds. And that's not what ended up happening. And it's, yeah, it seemed like an odd place for that match. But you also had to know that, going into that, you had to know that maybe some people would be bailing a little bit early, just in general. That's a late night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because this one, I guess I had no idea. This is on me more than it is on AEW. Had no idea that Action Bronson was, I don't want to say he's Bad Bunny levels necessarily, but the guy does seem more famous than I know.
I'm in the exact same boat. I'm very unfamiliar with him.
So, but yeah, I mean, him and Hook against Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, that was just kind of one of those ones that was just on the card. There wasn't a whole lot for me with Samoa Joe and Wardlow taking on Josh Woods and Tony Nese. Because, man, both of these matches, less than total 10 minutes.
Yeah, not much, nothing really to these matches. Definitely not feeling worthy of certainly of anything that you want to label a supercard. Yeah, I mean, they weren't long matches, but once again, you're dragging people past. Once you're dragging people past 10 Eastern, that past 10 Eastern. You gotta be offering them something more than that, especially considering the live crowd that had already sat through Dynamite.
Yeah, and the next one was did have a little more steak and sizzle to it. Jungle Boy taking on Rey Fénix. You know, I enjoy both of these guys as wrestlers. I'm not sure that they necessarily always put together the most, technically sound matches. Is that how I want to word it?
I guess so. I guess you could word it like that, yes.
I enjoy their stuff, but they disregard some rules occasionally that I'd rather see incorporated into matches. Really fun match. And I guess I wasn't completely surprised. Rey Fénix does not seem to get a whole lot of W's in the singles department. They feature him a lot. He definitely gets to show off his arsenal on a consistent basis. Those W's, though, especially in the singles rank, are few and far between.
Yeah, none. Yeah, Rey Fénix is not here to win singles matches very often, as you said. Jungle Boy needs to get some momentum back from the loss at All Out to Christian Cage, and also continuing this storyline, even though I have no idea when Christian is going to be cleared to return to any kind of action to blow it off.
It would seem that they got their vengeance, putting Jungle Boy through the table and costing him the match. Jungle Boy hasn't necessarily gone after them, so that's the other thing that's a little bit awkward about this feud. It's like the heel going, hey, I'm not done with you, and it's just like...
No, it was to say, I am done with you. But yeah, you're
but
right.
You're so not. But he's not done with them.
Yeah, no, no. They did a very poor follow through on what happened at All Out with Jungle Boy. He's wrestled one other match before this. Had no promo time. Luchasaurus hasn't been on the show. Even in a squash, Christian hasn't been on the show. So yeah, no. This felt out of nowhere. It felt like, okay, why are you attacking someone if you're telling them that you're finished with them and that you don't want to deal with them anymore? They weren't being the aggressor here. This storyline has been very good throughout it, but yeah, this Christian Cage injury is definitely throwing a monkey wrench into it. And just the scattershot way that AEW is booked sometimes, where certain people are not featured for weeks at a time, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to just remember what they're involved in from there,
and really rally behind them, it's a little bit of a big ask. Next up on their card, Eddie Kingston, Sammy Guevara. This one also, I mean, I will admit, at least this second hour, they had some bigger names on it.
Yeah,
they
did.
Here. This match did not go terribly wrong. This, though, I believe this is where they kind of lost me. or at least I really started to feel tired when Eddie Kingston wins the match with a sleeper. A little bit surprised that was the result. I figured that Sammy would win, because why does Eddie Kingston need to win? But then they disqualify him. Because he holds the sleeper on for too long. Or whatever you want to call it, Yeah, not sure about that booking decision,
yeah,
I suppose. Like, if you're going to give Kingston the win, give him the win. Like, or if you want Guevara to have the win, just give him the win. Like, Kingston's whatever. Like, you sell him as a tough guy, you'll be able to sell him as a tough out for anyone.
Yeah, this feud's not doing it for me. I know they had to take the delay this match because of real life issues between the two, which does not help the chemistry either between them. It feels like, once again, going from feuding with Jericho to feuding with Sammy Guevara is a step down. It's literally a step down in the same damn faction.
Yes. Yeah, yes,
so
it is.
So something about this just feels very hollow. It's the continuing with interaction with Kingston and his loose association with the Blackwood Combat Club and the Jerk Appreciation Society that's just been dragging on forever. They don't have great chemistry together.
Oh,
I don't know if I'll ever really be a fan of Sammy Guevara. I just comes off like a person I don't like, and not in a worked, I want to see him get beat up way. And Eddie, Eddie can be really good and a great promo, and he's not getting a lot to really sink his teeth into here.
Oh,
and I've seen it brought up, and I'm thinking, you know what? If you needed someone to be AEW champion for 8 weeks and then drop it to MJF at the next pay-per-view, there were worse ideas than having Eddie Kingston win the title in New York and holding it for a short period.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't see TK pulling that trigger. I think Kingston's about pushed his limit with where things are gonna go. Because I'm not even sure that he would snag the is it the TNT? Yeah, the TNT Championship is the men's version.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm not even sure if I see him going on a TNT run. It's possible. It wouldn't completely shock me. Definitely not going to happen right now with Wardlow as champion.
No. But they got to get... But we blew past it because it's not important. They have done a terrible job with the follow-up on Wardlow. And there's a number of reasons for that, and many of them are not his fault in any way, shape... Actually, they're all not his fault in any way, shape, or form. But, man, is this... Has this Wardlow TNT title reign and everything they've done with him since Double or Nothing just felt like nothing.
And the fact that there have been... Okay, his initial point when he came out was, I want to face CM Punk for the title. So I'm going to go do other things. Okay... Don't like the logic, but if that's what you want to go with, have at it, I suppose. You know, it's one of those situations. So he goes after the TNT Championship. It's kind of clear that CM Punk is just out of the picture now. Why aren't you going for the big championship? Like, they just had a tournament for that title and you decided to skip out on it. Yeah, not good for your character. Like, I know that it's an unsaid thing, and but it's still there. You know, and you haven't really given him a whole lot of anything to work with on TV.
No, he has not. He has not had a feud. He got lumped in with the whole thing with Jay Lethal and the ROH guys. He's still kind of lumped in with the ROH people. He's still lumped in with freaking
Mark Sterling
and this crap. Like, jeez, my God, what are you doing with this guy? Get him a feud. Get him something.
Yeah, as much as I like Josh Woods as a wrestler, they haven't done enough to establish him as a guy who should be able to take out Wardlow. You know, they've given his ROH credentials, but, it's another one of those, when you get called up from NXT, WWE has got to kind of make a point of showing off how good you are before you start challenging for their titles, you know. Oh, they came from so-and-so. You got to prove it here. Like, that's great, but you got to prove it here. And, Josh Woods hasn't done that. Like, he could have been a more credible contender for Wardlow, but they would have needed to take a little more time with him. If he's part of the AEW roster, that part is still confusing too. Like, why is Wardlow involved with so many ROH people? Like, I just realized when you were rattling them off how many of them are ROH people that he's involved with.
Maybe I didn't pay that close attention, but was there any dissension at all between Wardlow and Samoa Joe during the match? I don't think there was.
No, there was not.
If they're going with a champion versus champion type of deal there...
Uh-oh.
But it doesn't seem like they're going in that direction either. They're still trying to... They're still determined to make ROH its own thing, even if they have no television outlet for it. So I don't think they will do that. But, yeah, AEW needs to figure out their heel side. Yeah, it's... Because their heel side's pretty weak right now. It's why getting that title on MJF sooner than later is a good idea. Because you do have a lot more options for a heel champion to go on a run.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as it is, you got Moxley's first title defense is going to be against another babyface Hangman Page after he just beat another babyface to win the title. I mean, we're still at a point where, well, other than MJF, Chris Jericho is the only heel who's allowed any heat. Really?
Yeah. There's one that we haven't gotten to on the list here, but that's a whole different category. Oh. Yeah. Oh, and now that I'm looking at this, this full report here, definitely fell asleep during the Battle Royal. Yeah, I'm trying to look for... I was trying to look for other names, you know what I mean, to see who could be used in the rest of this report for some type of heel, but, whew, man, list is not good. List is not good in this Battle Royal.
It was not a good list.
Lance Archer is on the list, and W. Morrissey are at least big guys that you can sell as credible threats simply because of their size.
But you've already done that, though. You've already done Archer versus
Moxley. Yeah.
And also Archer versus Hangman, for that matter. So they went to the well of Archer as a TV episode as a Dynamite challenger for a title on multiple occasions.
Oh yes, yes they did.
Hitting him up and then having him lose, hitting him up, having him lose. So.
They're a little bit short on the. On the heel side, when those two are your list, really, you might be able to do something. I don't know. They do not seem to be able to handle Rush and or Andrade. And yeah, the more Andrade doesn't do anything, the more I just think that maybe I was wrong about him or something.
I mean, he has only really excelled in the NXT bubble. It's not all his fault. He could certainly be a guy not as high on Rush. I certainly don't watch AAA, and I was not watching ROH in the last like 2 years very, very regularly. So I'm still unfamiliar with Rush and what he does and his reputation. Apparently he has some type of reputation as being controversial, a hothead of some sort, but I've never really seen that.
Yeah, he really seems to kind of go for it when he's in the ring. So it would not kind of completely surprise me if he's a little hot-headed in the backstage area, because I feel like I've heard that mentioned in places too. Even when he was ROH champion, I feel like there was some type of dust-up that happened, and I don't feel like looking for the story right now, but that kind of contributed to him losing the championship. So, yeah, I don't think he is any type of saint there. Not a whole lot going on there. You know, one of the other few heels that is allowed to have some heat is Jade Cargill. I don't know. Terrible transition, maybe, but I figured that we had to cover her in some way before moving on to the WWE here.
Yeah, no, she gets another relatively easy win. They're still building her up and keeping that TBS championship on her. not particularly seeing any kind of end game for any of this, though, either. I'm not. It just doesn't feel like they've built up a person enough to give her a serious challenge. Nor are they ready. Seem to be ready to move her up to being to AEW Women's Champion either.
Right.
So she's just kind of on a treadmill right now. She's kind of running in place right now.
Yeah, she's in her own personal limbo at this juncture. You know, she can't go any higher for some reasons, but we know that she's not going to be taking a bunch of L's either in the meantime. And it's hard to they have thrown a decent chunk of people at her and she's running out of people. I was scratching my head a little bit about the heel turn involved with the people at ringside there. But that might be another one of me showing my age at this juncture. I'm not sure. So the Battle Royal, definitely when I fell asleep. I guess, is there anything to be said about Ricky Starks getting the W back from Hobbs?
It helped Ricky out, and also him winning a match, and anything goes match over Hobbs, helps people establish him as a tough guy. So you know, it helps, but I don't know. I don't know what Ricky Starks' place is right now. And he's definitely a guy who has a world of potential and could be a franchise player, but it doesn't feel like they're slotting him in that role anytime soon. Maybe once MJF gets that championship, because it is a foregone conclusion that MJF is going to be champion. In the not too distant future, Starks gets himself really over as a babyface. That is a match you could certainly go to, but until that time, I could see Mr. Starks treading some water.
He's another one where because Wardlow's the TNT championship. The kind of standard alternate path for someone that's not going to be in the hunt for the main championship. He doesn't have that open to him right now.
No. I mean, of course, there's the All Atlantic Championship.
Oh,
whatever that is, I guess. And then you have. Maybe the ROH Championship, but I feel like they're going to let Jericho roll with that for a little bit. It's definitely a if thinking about the history of ROH and what it meant, and seeing Chris Jericho walk around with the ROH title. I mean,
it has the same vibe as when the WWE brought back ECW. And there were ECW champions under the WWE banner.
When Vince McMahon was ECW champion, that's exactly what it feels like.
Oh, man.
You probably want to get at least one ROH pay-per-view out. ROH-specific pay-per-view out of Jericho going in and holding the title and getting him on an ROH pay-per-view.
It would not surprise me because that's what Jeremy thought, that this was more of a hoping that Jericho pops some ROH stuff. Because it's Jericho.
I'm sure it is, and maybe it'll work. Maybe if they keep this thing on him long term, maybe the good folks at Warner Brothers Discovery will get them. We'll give them that extra hour of television to do an ROH show.
They have enough TV to go around that they can pop up an extra hour. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not sure if I'm necessarily going to watch it, but I definitely think that they can produce that content. And honestly, it can look better than ROH did previously and still probably have about, you know, do something more like NXT. Hey, if you don't want to have the people travel and you want to keep expenses down in that, just do some crowd down in Jacksonville. You know, do the, what's the place there at, I can't even think of it there, at the Jaguars Stadium that they were using. Daly's Place, yeah. Just have him produce it at Daly's Place. Have it be something like that, and go from there. You know, make it super super budgety and cheap. Have at it. You can, yeah. I'm sure they can find somewhere on some one of their half a like two dozen channels or whatever to pop in an hour of ROH. So, yeah, and I guess to go back, we were kind of, had started with Ricky Starks not having a place to go. Like, the ROH title isn't really, I don't think he's going to be the one to take that from Jericho. Maybe it would be a little bit later down the line, but right now does not seem like that that time. So yeah, it's going to be interesting for Starks to see what they can do with him. Because, I mean, they did the same thing almost in a lot of ways for Jungle Boy, where he got a good push to start with, and it's just kind of fizzled because, you know, they're in a similar spot as Jade Cargill, where it seems like they're not committed to taking them up to the main championship. So what do you do with them exactly?
Yeah.
And they don't have enough tenure to have these, to have personal feuds. I mean, I guess they could start one. But yeah, it's something they haven't really gone with either. They haven't had any individualized, personalized feuds. Well, I guess Starks just had his first one with Hobbs, so maybe he could move on from there, but it's still a little bit of a tough ask, kind of moving on from that feud. You almost need a good transition feud in between there that doesn't mean too much.
Right.
So I guess that is way more AEW than you and I normally talk. Did you end up watching the 2 hours of wrestling before that 2 hours of wrestling?
Yes, but I ended up watching it after.
I was in the same boat. I believe I watched SmackDown on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
I ended up watching SmackDown Saturday evening.
So yeah, there's only so much wrestling one man can take in a Friday evening. what do you think about the continued alliance between one Samuel Zane and the Bloodline here?
Oh, it's still very hilarious. And now he has Roman Reigns' support. He has everyone's acceptance. The acceptance of everyone except Jay. And of course, it's gone to his head. And he's being even more obnoxious than ever. It's really, really great stuff. I love this stuff.
I don't know why I'm like, oh man, Roman's really gonna drop the hammer on Sammy right now, isn't he? When he had his T-shirt torn off of him, and then when he gives him the honorary Ooze T-shirt, it was Man, that was quite a moment there. And to see Sami Zayn, just there aren't a whole lot of people that I would put in that position. It just feels like that man could make it on some type of sitcom and not really have any problems.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, he's incredible comedic timing. It's again this whole storyline's incredibly enjoyable. Again, I'm not sure exactly how long they're gonna go with this until something bad happens and he gets blamed for it, and they violently kick him out of the group so he can start his babyface run, but. Which is definitely coming. He's just too damn entertaining to keep a heel forever. So it's got him, them turning against him and him reuniting with Kevin Owens. I mean, once again, it's predictable, but it's a hell of a ride along the way, and it's definitely it's the right thing to do.
Well, and it has been kind of interesting because, I do remember yesteryear fairly well when people were like, "Ah, man, Sami Zayn is such a great baby face. Can he do this heel thing?" And he's been doing this heel thing for quite a while at this point.
Yeah, he's been a heel for 5 years. It's going on, I think.
Oh
Somewhere
my!
somewhere in October, I believe. I believe early October. Yes.
Oh my gosh. I did not realize it has been that long.
Yeah, no, it's been 5 years, and meanwhile, I'm pretty sure Kevin Owens has turned heel to face to heel and back again about four or five times in that period.
Yes, he has. Because there have been times where he kind of agrees with Sammy and times that he disagrees with Sammy, and it just kind of depends because their paths do keep on crossing, but I also don't think that they've had a full-fledged feud in quite some time at this juncture either.
No, I mean,
I'm not saying they
it's been
didn't have
over.
matches, but I don't feel like a full-on feud has happened in a while.
I no, it was, I mean, a year and a half. I mean, but
That's pretty
it's.
long in the WWE at this point.
I guess so, yeah. But no, it's still not that long ago. I mean,
Oh.
they wrestled each other at WrestleMania in 2021. So it's
Oh, yeah.
not that long ago. And yes, that was Kevin Owens was a babyface.
Oh.
Then he was a heel throughout the towards the end of last year into the match with Steve Austin, and was a heel coming out of that, but now he's a babyface. So yes, Kevin Owens has turned 3 times in the last three. It would be about 3 times in the last 3 years, 3 or 4 times in the last 3 years that he's turned.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how his character does not change all that much with these turns. It's impressive work on his part. So yeah, it's I do love this Sammy Bloodline stuff. Like it's one of those things that makes watching some of this silliness worth it. Liv Morgan gets a win over Lacey Evans. Any big thoughts on this one?
Not really. I mean, it's booking 101 type stuff of getting saying, "Ooh, Liv Morgan's tough now," and she's ready for Extreme Rules. It's all fine. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with it. Once again, I mean, what's wrong with it has already been established. They're trying. Liv's trying.
Oh.
I'm still not sure how she gets out of Extreme Rules as still champion.
It would be pretty wild. I that would be one of those I it'd be up there with my shock factor if she ends up retaining at Extreme Rules.
Because they finally got Ronda at a place where she is being natural, where she is being effective, where that works for her. And they have not had that, and they took a long, it took a long time to get there. So to have her lose her first big match as a heel, I don't, as a full heel, I don't think you do that. I mean, God bless Liv Morgan, but it's time for, I think it's time for Ronda to get the, for the true Ronda to get the, to get that title reign. Not the fake smiling version of Ronda, who didn't seem like she was sure of herself, confident, or even wanted to be there. Ronda seems fully invested in this version of herself.
It's been a nice look for Ronda Rousey. Like you said, it feels a little more natural for her to be going this route. Liv Morgan has had enough title defenses at this point that you can not call it a failure on TV for sure. And it's probably been, will she have had it for about 3 months?
By the time it rolls around, it will be just over 3 months, yes.
Yeah, so she's had a solid little run. So it's not going to be a fluky championship win. But she does need some more work if they want her to be there.
Yeah, she does. She needs work with people believing that she's tough. It comes down to that. I mean, she just doesn't. The whole, I've watched this whole my whole life. I love it, so I deserve it. It rings so hollow, and I might even make that point again a little later as well. but at least that one's not supposed to be a baby face. But this, yeah, Liv. Yeah, she. As long as she goes down swinging, it's not the end for her. If it's a total squash, then maybe. But as long as she puts up a fight, and it's an Extreme Rules match. You use the kendo stick. You spray Ronda in the face with a fire extinguisher. Do all the hardcore spots.
Oh right. And then, have her, it's easy enough to have her pass out instead of tap.
Even if she tapped, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's not the 1980s where no one submits. She can still tap, but either way. As long as she goes down fighting.
And I think that that segment did at least prove that she'll go down fighting. I don't think that she still has a chance, as we've already outlined. But, it is what it is. It's going to be interesting to see what the WWE does with... they are rebooting Braun Strowman. He also... he still has a very narrow pool of people that he can really tangle with in the WWE. Yeah. And Otis, it seems like a good appetizer for rebooting Braun Strowman, but it's also getting someone off that list pretty early on here.
Instead
of doing some more traditional squash matches, but I'm not sure that I necessarily want to see another Braun Strowman squash match either. That kind of is what it is. Good gravy. I forgot how quick this Raquel Rodriguez and Dakota Kai match was.
Nasty business there. this Raquel push is not going to be fun to watch, because she started as a Triple H project, then continued on even after Triple H was removed from power at NXT or his health issues. Still a very focused person on an NXT, and on the main roster here, whether it's in the transition from Vince to Triple H, they still want to see that. But doesn't matter who's in charge, they still want to see that back and that smile. Triple H. I mean, he sent Aaliyah packing, so he didn't think that that Raquel was the issue in that team. I mean, Aaliyah has been replaced by Shotzi with basically no mention of Aaliyah ever existing. It's like Shotzi was Raquel's partner the whole time.
No, didn't I feel like they said that she was injured or something like that?
Maybe they did, and
But it
I don't pay
was
attention to Raquel matches.
it was a very short, they're just like, oh. She's out injured, so Shotzi came out. But I'm like, well, why did Shotzi come out? Like, I love Shotzi, but her and Raquel don't seem like any better of a team than Raquel and
No, it doesn't.
Aaliyah.
No, it doesn't work at all. No. And then maybe eventually they'll learn that Raquel is, well, in the Raquel Aaliyah team, you could have equal blame for that one. Hopefully, when this Shotzi Raquel team doesn't work, they'll see who's really to blame for it.
Yeah, I do like the only thing that Raquel got to knock off was the whole smiling bit. I feel like that did at least take a back seat the last couple of appearances. That's not enough though.
No.
And even her getting the Hispanic Heritage Month promos, I'm not sure that those are doing a whole lot for her either.
No, it's not. No, nothing's really. She doesn't have, and she tanked the NXT Women's Division. She'll if they push her too hard here, she'll tank the SmackDown Women's Division too. There's nothing about her that is star worthy, in my opinion. I don't see it.
Yeah. Well, if you keep on trying to put her in tag teams, I'm throwing it out there, they don't really see that much either. Like that's not where singles people go, especially in the women's division. They have enough people to support a singles run for her if that's the way they wanted to go.
Well, I hope you're right about that.
Oh, you don't think they have enough bodies for her to have a singles run?
No, I mean, just we'll see about if they give her, well, if they don't give her the singles run.
Oh. Yeah, it's like you said, like it definitely appears that she's not going to be getting one anytime, at least soon. Like Shotzi doesn't make the save if you're not going tag teaming again. So, yeah, something I think they know something's up with Raquel. Anything to be said about the Usos beating the Brawling Brutes this week to close out the SmackDown?
Nothing, not much. I mean, it was a good match. Imperium gimmicking involved to continue that storyline. A few moments with Sami Zayn getting a little too rambunctious at ringside, and Jay having to putting him in his place. No, that's it. It was fine for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a solid closer for a Thursday or for a Friday night there. Raw was kind of chock full here for the most part.
A very wrestling heavy show. This was Triple H. You know, filling his show with long matches. I mean, that's pretty much other than some promos here and there and the Miz stuff with Dexter Lumis. This was 20. This did any match go under 20 minutes on this show?
yes, but just barely. The review I am looking at clocks in the Raw Championship, the Women's Raw Championship match between Bianca Belair and Io Sky at 18:15. So, yeah, not quite 20, but 18 is more than enough time. than enough time. So... that is definitely a long match. One, I guess, the Seth Rollins segment might have been one of the longer fighting, or one of the longer talking segments, really, of the show.
Yes. Two. Yeah, it was.
But then, yeah, him and Ray. Oh, why are they? They did not list a time for Seth and Ray, but they went on a commercial break and straddled the hour marker.
Yes, but yeah, they did. It was still, once again, Triple H not afraid to shake up the formula a little bit and put things in different parts of the show that Vince would. Vince's show was incredibly regimented, and it was incredibly compartmentalized. Triple H will have a match go through the top of the hour and then move on to something important next. Once again, two matches took up the entire first hour, basically, plus the women's talking segment. That's pretty amazing.
And then another scene chewer came up after that. Kevin Owens and Johnny Gargano taking on the Alpha Academy. Again, not quite a 20-minute match, but clocking in just a hair over 13 minutes. Solid length for a tag team match.
Yes, yep, solid length, solid match. Really enjoyed this one. Once again, I'm pretty much just going to be saying I really enjoyed this match. I really enjoyed this match over and over again. So once again, Triple H is filling time with long matches. I mean, not necessarily storyline wise anything that's really really captivating right now. But if you like long wrestling, Raw is the show for you, even more than Dynamite, which is pretty crazy.
There's a lot of good wrestling. There was some not great wrestling, or at least whatever wrestling, with Omos taking on some local wrestlers.
It was fine. It's what it needed to be. I mean, I feel like Omos is being heated up for something, whether it's Braun, whether it's Brock and Saudi, just to get Brock on the show and have him do impressive feats of strength, or either one of them to do impressive feats of strength with Omos. I'm thinking that is where we're going with this Omos re-push, because once again, I think Triple H especially will know that Omos is still not, Omos isn't ready.
Oh.
To be put in any kind of a main event.
Yeah.
Spot, You know, correct. The attraction match where the whole thing is, can his opponent, you know, pick him up and throw him around? That is likely going to be almost a slap in life for a while.
He's in a spot that and probably not really of his own making, and he's gonna have to deal with it. Surprise of the night, Candice LeRae back in the WWE. She took out Nikki A.S.H. in short order. One of the very short matches of the night.
It was what it needed to be. We're establishing Candice LeRae as someone who's a potential stop star. We're obviously transitioning Nikki A.S.H. out of this almost a superhero gimmick. I don't know if that means Jeremy will finally get his wish, and Sanity Nikki Cross will finally, and Crazy Nikki will finally make her return. But it's she's definitely doing that whole going on a losing streak, going on an emotional breakdown story that they've probably done too much in recent times, to be honest.
She should have snapped a couple of months ago with the way things have gone for her.
Yeah, no. But no, it's pretty obvious that's where it's going. And then Candice, because they did, you know, she gets a good win. And she's in a segment with the Bianca and Friends, along with Damage Control. It's an interesting situation, because if she sides with Bianca and Friends, then it's 4-on-3 advantage babyface. But if Candice ends up and ends up on the other side, then that probably makes more sense.
There's a lot of time between then and now to see which side Candice ends up landing on, and you know, maybe she stays with the baby faces and Damage Control just adds in other ways.
That's all very, very possible. But I don't remember if they did or if someone else did the history that Bailey legitimately has with Candice LeRae on the California independent scenes. They've known each other a very long time.
That would make sense. Both kind of from the same area of California too, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know where Candice is from, but I know she worked, you know, PWG and the Northern Independence, the San Francisco Bay Area Independence a lot. No, it's actually Shotzi who her and Bailey actually went to the same high school at the same time, but they just didn't know each other.
Oh. Well, I have not heard that, and that is pretty wild. And I guess if you're at a high school large enough, not entirely surprising. I was at a high school that I 100% did not know everyone in my class.
Right. And I don't know if they were in the same class. I think Bailey might be a couple years older, but...
Oh, okay.
I think that makes sense, that Bailey would be 2 or 3 years older. So when Bailey was a senior, you know...
Yeah, maybe she's a freshman or sophomore. Freshman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, fair enough, too. It's, especially in that case, it would not be entirely surprising that they didn't quite know each other. These things happen unless you're prom king or queen somewhere. It's a fun development for the ladies. I'm not sure, you know, Candice LeRae strikes me as one of those people. I'm not sure how far she'll get. I'm not sure if she'll ever get a championship run necessarily. Sometimes though, you just need some bodies for people to get wins from. And I think you can definitely sell her credibility pretty well to serve that purpose in the future.
Yeah.
A true, at least according to this report, a true 20-minute match. Sami Zayn, AJ Styles. These guys have been at it a long time. They are very good at their jobs.
Yes, they're very good. And it's once again, on shows like this, and really weeks like this, because you got to throw in SmackDown and Dynamite and Rampage. We are so spoiled of good wrestling.
Yes,
on TV nowadays. This was another really good match. Once again, if it was, the funny part is, if it was on a worse show, it would stand out more.
Oh. Yeah, there were so many good matches. This one was kind of lost in the shuffle. That is some pretty impressive territory to be in, like you said. It is kind of ridiculous. The quality of in-ring product is rarely in question in these parts. I feel like we might talk about one bad match here or there. I don't feel like as a whole we have complained about stuff. For any of the leagues, really. Like I don't even feel like. As much as I decided not to, and not that I could watch Impact at this point, since I don't have that channel, and it wasn't an in-ring quality thing that I stopped watching that for. You know, even their stuff was pretty solid. I'm not sure that they were doing as well as AEW and the WWE, but still... In-ring product, as a general whole, is pretty pretty good these days.
Yeah, yes, it is. So these two have, surprise, surprise, Sami Zayn and AJ Styles had a very good match. Solo Sikoa gets involved, Sami Zayn picks up the win, and Sami Zayn and Solo are certainly a united front within the bloodline, and AJ Styles lost. You know, due to outside interference, not having anyone watching his back, transition directly right into being confronted by Finn Balor in the Judgment Day. Once again, AJ Styles refuses to join Judgment Day and punctuates it with a middle finger. He gets beat down for his trouble, but Finn refuses to put the final blow to seriously injure Styles. You know, still trying to get him on their side. Really good stuff. Once again, good way of they're doing a good job of intermingling talent and storylines. So that's really good. You know, people aren't just being compartmentalized in a certain part of the show. You'll get interactions with different people. That definitely makes things more entertaining. It's so once again, really good stuff there. And unfortunately, it did lead to it was the main event of the show, but maybe among the weakest matches, Matt Riddle and Damian Priest. I mean, the match was fine, but, you know,
no.
After all it had followed, you know, not...
Yeah, it's subpar by comparison.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a solid match. I guess in general, I do feel like they are starting to turn the corner on Judgment Day as a group. It's weird how getting Dominic Mysterio on their side has helped them out. I mean, Dominic Mysterio himself hasn't really done a whole lot, I don't feel like.
Yeah, no, because, well, you know what? They actually achieved an objective. They won a Dominic, they got Dominic. They've won more matches than they've lost since then as well. You know, it's only been about 2 weeks.
Well, right.
2 weeks, literally about 3 weeks. Of course, Matt Riddle did defeat Damian Priest, clean. Yeah. But Riddle needed that win since it's looking like his match with Seth is being positioned as the main event of Extreme Rules. So, you know, to get both guys got you know, we established that in the pecking order that Riddle's feud with Seth Rollins is more important than anything going on with the Judgment Day and Rey Mysterio and the like.
Because
they both got wins.
It definitely is more important.
But once again, Riddle was the victim of a beatdown until Edge made the save. Edge, who I thought was going, it felt like they were setting him up for a longer layoff for sure. Makes his return, not selling the knee at all.
It was a little shocking how quickly he came back.
It feels like in a way maybe they weren't necessarily going to bring him back so quickly, but once again, when you're faced with these pay-per-views that Roman Reigns isn't on, you need to gather up the star power anywhere you can.
And Edge is on that list. Becky is.
Becky is, and challenging Finn Balor to an I Quit match at Extreme Rules. I mean, they are utilizing the Extreme Rules concept better than they have in a number of years. I mean, I guess, once again, some of it's out of desperation because this is a B-show without Roman Reigns, so or any world championship to be defended. So, you know, loading this thing up with all the gimmick matches you can muster, it's the right call here. It's the right call to get through this show.
Right. I did think that it was interesting that it was an I Quit match. This would definitely be something that, should Finn Balor lose this thing, Judgment Day, are they, dead in the water again at that point if he ends up being one that quits this thing?
It'll be an interesting way to do this match, because once again, Ed say, I don't quit. I mean, not that you can look through Edge's career throughout history and not find any submission losses.
Oh,
I'm sure there are several, but it feels like maybe that they will do something where they're forcing Edge to say I quit because they're threatening someone else, whether it be Rey Mysterio or whoever.
No,
to, you know, force them to say to do the kind of cheat I quit, where it's not because Edge is an actual real pain himself, it's because he's being gallant, it's because he's being a hero.
That would be a good way to get Finn Balor a W and not make Edge look too bad. So I think that type of situation should definitely be on the ballot for options for outcomes of this match. But that wraps up Raw. Is there anything else? Like, I don't feel like there's been a whole lot of news again in the past week.
Not a big news week, so I think we can head on out of here.
Since Jeremy is not on the show, I am drinking one of the beers that he sent me from Sugar Creek Brewing, Unlimited Juice, Juicy East Coast IPA, 6.5% ABV. This thing has been delicious. There are, for whatever reason, a bunch of fruits and specifically some, it looks like avocado and some strawberries and some lime and some watermelon, some kiwi. I'm not sure necessarily that all of those flavors are in there, but this is quite a juicy IPA. And should you happen to be in the Charlotte area, it is on my list of recommendations to hit Sugar Creek Brewing. There are a couple other fine establishments not too far from there also, which is always a good way to travel. Try to book your good breweries together. It's happens more frequently than you would think. So that is the Beltane Beer and Craft Beer Guide from at DeFrango11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.